This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of November 20th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 265. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the Big Deal feature, I look at the rise of British Columbia's 37th Premier, David Eby. Veteran journalist George Orr joins me to talk about his documentary of Eby's bittersweet 2013 election victory. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or is Justin Trudeau caught between a rock and a hard place? Canada's frosty relations with communist China were on the world stage last week due to this exchange between Xi Jinping and Trudeau at the G20 summit in Bali.
Everything we discuss is then leaked to the paper, that's not appropriate. And that's not how the way the conversation was conducted. If there is sincerity on your part,
free and open and frank dialogue, and that is what we will continue to have. We will continue to look to work constructively together, but there will be things we will disagree on, and we will have to continue.
Let's create the conditions first.
She was unhappy that someone leaked information to the media about their informal meeting the previous day. A Mandarin phrase that she said near the end of the exchange was not translated, but it meant, quote, otherwise it is hard to say what will happen, end quote. Many China watchers interpreted that as a threat. Trudeau is under pressure back home after revelations from CSIS, the Canada National Spy Agency, that Chinese agents infiltrated Liberal and Conservative campaigns during the 2019 federal election. But Trudeau has been notoriously weak amid China's threats to Canada's national security, even after the kidnapping of the two Michaels. In 2016, at the G20 summit in Hangzhou, China, liberals were giddy because Chinese leaders called Trudeau Little Potato. Potato in Mandarin is Trudeau, and Pierre Trudeau got along with Chairman Mao back in the 1970s. Contrast that with the 2014 G20 summit in Brisbane, Australia, where Conservative Prime Minister Stephen Harper stood up to a bully. He bluntly told Vladimir Putin to get out of Ukraine. My stories for the Breaker.News over the years and other publications have shown evidence that China influenced all three of Trudeau Liberal election wins since 2015. This is what Trudeau told reporters in Bali.
We saw a video today of you having an exchange with Xi Jinping, and President Xi seemed to be very upset. He accused you of leaking the contents of a conversation that you two had on the sidelines of the G20. I'm just wondering, why was President Xi so upset? Was this a misunderstanding? Did you offer him some kind of assurances that you wouldn't talk about this?
First of all, not every conversation is always going to be easy. But it's extremely important that we continue to stand up for the things that are important for Canadians. This is something we always do, and we will continue to. I highlighted areas in which we can and should be working together. A good example is the Nature COP, COP15, being held in Montreal over the coming weeks. At the same time, as I highlighted areas of mutual concern, geopolitical challenges, from the war in Ukraine to the situation in North Korea. I also highlighted things of preoccupations to Canadians, like the question of interference with our citizens, and highlighted that it's important that we be able to have dialogue about this. But part of our values as Canadians is being open and frank about the conversations we have, keeping Canadians involved and apprised of what it is that we're doing and the conversations we're having here, and that's exactly what I did.
Why do you think, though, why do you think he was so upset? What was the message that he was trying to get across to you? Do you think this was a power play of some kind?
We know that China is an important global player in the economy and has a very big impact on events around the world. Canada needs to be able to engage constructively and directly on areas we can work together, while at the same time we continue to be there to challenge on human rights, on values and principles that matter to Canadians, and look to advance the interests of Canadians. And this is something that we're going to consistently do in a clear and hopefully a constructive way.
The all-party House of Commons committees on Canada-China relations and procedure in House affairs need to get to the bottom of what happened in the last three elections. Did China influence the outcome? Better yet, call in the RCMP now. What do you think? Email bob@thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.news podcast. British Columbia has a new premier. The NDP's David Eby was sworn in as the 37th premier on November 18th at the Musqueam Indian Band Community Centre as John Horgan, the 36th premier, looked on. Horgan won a bout with throat cancer earlier this year, but decided in June to call it quits and return to the backbench after 5.5 years as premier. It was a rare, seamless transfer of power in BC, where premiers tend to resign in scandal or lose in elections. Here is a clip from Eby's first speech as premier.
We've been through a lot together as a province. I did the list. Pandemics, wildfires, floods. It has been a remarkable time. And I've been traveling across British Columbia, and I've heard from so many people. They're happy with the things that the government has done. They're inspired by the leadership that John offered the province, all of my colleagues delivering for their communities, for every British Columbian. But they also point out the work is not done. You need to do more on healthcare, making sure that we have access when we have a crisis to the best care possible. We have a family doctor. On housing, that we can actually young people can start their lives, they can get out of their parents' house, that seniors don't have to choose between rent and groceries, that people with a decent income can actually find housing that is attainable and is theirs. And public safety, issues of crime, the feeling that people have of concern about the safety of the people living in the tents on the sidewalk, struggling with mental health and addiction in the streets of our communities, and the feeling that they have that their downtown just isn't as safe as it was before the pandemic. And when we're facing global economic headwinds in our province, challenges around the world facing economies, that we have a strong and secure economy for all British Columbians, that is an economy that also responds to the challenge of our time, climate change, that we maintain a leadership role while building and securing good quality jobs for British Columbians. And we know that to get there, to deliver these things, these big challenges, Shirley talked about easy stuff, you know, just a few challenges. It's not. These are massive. These are massive challenges. And if the pandemic taught us anything, it's that we can't solve these problems alone. We need to solve them together. Part of why we're here today, working together.
My guest this week is an award-winning journalist, educator, and documentary filmmaker whose career spans 40 years. George Orr got to know David Eby during the 2013 election with an up-close and personal documentary called My Name is David Eby. Orr followed Eby's successful campaign to upset BC Liberal Premier Christy Clark in the Vancouver Point Grey riding.
Meet Joel Solomon, philanthropist and stout supporter of progressive causes. Tonight, his penthouse is crammed with folks who've come to support and sign up for the EB campaign.
We're very honored tonight to have a future member of the legislature of BC. Tonight is about volunteering and offering support to David, so you'll hear more about that, but whatever you can do.
We need strong government,
We need government that is a principled government that is willing to, on occasion, make unpopular decisions because it is the right decision to make.
I don't think there's anybody who thinks that Vancouver's highest and best potential is in being a tanker stop for bitumen from the Alberta tar sands and facilitating the rapid expansion of that ongoing project.
George, just to bring us back to the work that you did in that documentary about David Eby and how you got to know him through that documentary.
Well, you and I were both independent journalists trying to cover the Olympics, which was like staring at a concrete wall and trying to figure out what's on the other side. And one of the people on the outside of the concrete wall was a young activist, lawyer, bright, articulate, really interested, like not ambitious, surprisingly not ambitious, surprisingly kind of ingenuous, which struck me as odd given how many people get into social activism with an agenda to better themselves. And he didn't seem to have that agenda. So I watched him. I was shooting my own stuff, and I watched him involved with several social activities in the downtown east side, helping out people, advising people of their rights, being a really good social activist, and not somebody who was a doctrinaire politician sort of person, but somebody who just had a legal ticket and thought he could do good. So I approached him one day, this is well before the Olympics, and said, you're going to be the premier someday. And he laughed and he sort of, oh, shucks, because it was preposterous then. I said, no, you are the sort of person that could become the premier of BC. So you and I are going to make a documentary about how you run for politics. And his answer was good lunch and no. So it took a bit of charm and elbow twisting. And I suggested to him that as people become politicians, we need to look back at who they were and how this started. We need a sense of the before in order to have context for the after. And he bought in. So he ran against Christy Clark in Point Grey. And the deal was, I want complete access. If there's anything, I will do what I think is appropriate as a journalist. I'm not on your side, but I'm not against you. I'm a storyteller. Let me in. And thought about it, and he let me in. So I was there for just about everything that happened. I think I shot for 60 days straight. And there was never any hand in front of the camera. There was never any turn it off. When I wanted him to sit down and talk, he talked. When I wanted him to wear a wireless microphone, he did. When I wanted to go knocking on doors with him, he was open to anything because he saw the value, I think, in the transparency of how one becomes one of these people. And until the final day, he had no idea if he was going to get elected or not. So the irony was he won, the party lost, but he got his foot in the door, and it's the last I've talked to him.
I guess owing mainly to the approach that John Horgan took, which was mainly centrist, a centrist who reached out to the business community while still trying to keep happy those in labor. Of course, there's been more recent disputes and friction with the people on the environmental wing of the NDP, which is something that David Eby now has to solve.
So which party is the NDP? And I think they've wrestled with that since day one. Are they the party of labor? Are they a party of social activism? Are they the progressives or the labor party? So wearing two hats in politics can be tough. So staying on the fence in that regard. It's going to be interesting to watch how this new premier does that, if he does that, or if he decides, I'm in it for now. I think I can make the social changes I need. It's kind of like Dave Barrett did when he got elected in 75. There's things I said I would do, and I would actually do them. And if it costs me, I'm prepared to pay in order to get them done. Because we still have the legacy of what Dave Barrett did, you know, like half a century later, almost half a century later. And I'm hoping that Eby will be as good as he was when he got into politics about the environment, about pipelines, about natural gas, about forestry, about preserving the environmental legacy of this province. And I think because of what happened with the NDP when he got anointed in a really ugly fashion. And because of all that, I think there's a concern in the NDP. The party may start to disintegrate unless he does that. So my hope is that he'll veer in that, he'll go back to that direction and get away from centrist, but we'll see.
Was there a certain moment, incident, certain scene from the documentary, a certain anecdote that sticks in your mind that really embodies the David Eby that is now Premier of BC? Think back to something that happened during the production of the documentary.
I'm either a fairly astute judge of character or I'm really naive. So I can sniff crap from a good distance away pretty quickly because I've been doing this for a long time. And I met a genuinely nice guy, the kind of guy I would actually like to have coffee with and become friends with. And during the exercise, he was entirely open. It wasn't like he wasn't playing the role of David Eby for me. He was just being this guy who was incessantly knocking on doors and shaking hands and being charming, being himself. And there's an authenticity that I think most people, you get a sense with people when you meet them the first time. You can judge in 5 seconds, maybe right or wrong, but you can judge pretty quickly. Is this person a real person or is this something going on here? And he struck me as a real person. And so I shot a lot, but I hung out a lot. Like, you know, I probably shot 60 hours in 60 days. So I spent a lot more time with him. And just, you know, he's a nice person. I really, I enjoyed his company. He's the sort of, the kind of person you'd like to see running things. And so I really, I kind of fell for him in that sense. So it was hard not to make him into a hero because my story wasn't about me glorifying him. It was about him doing whatever he did. But the story comes off as sympathetic because he's a good guy. He was a good guy. And my hope is, as he's gotten into government and he's been disciplined about how to move ahead and not make a mess out of anything, because he hasn't made a mess out of anything, my hope is this could be a transformative political event in our time. He struck me as a really nice guy. Like I say, I've got a pretty good detector. So that was it.
Where do you think that the David Eby that you knew then will go now? Will power change David Eby as premier?
Oh, I'm sure it will. My belief is that he'll move somewhat towards green because his real threat politically, I think, is green. Like with the formerly known as the Liberals, now known as the to-be-announced party, they're a given entity in the province. They may get bigger or smaller a bit, but they're a given entity. The unknown is the green in this province because, well, there's a climate conference going on in Egypt today that's falling apart. The climate is a catastrophe. We've had terrible climate things happen here. And so I think if he wants to play the game on a long-term basis, he's got to move into where green is going to move into. Because Sonia Firstenau is a bright person. She and Adam Olson are doing doing an outstanding job for two MLAs. And green poses a threat. And I think Horgan tried to accommodate the threat by bringing them into the tent for a while. And so green has been bitten once, twice shy, I suspect. And so if he doesn't start to spread his philosophy over what green owns now, that's going to be a political threat for him. Because he hasn't got a huge majority. He's got, he's in office. And to stay in office, he's got to expand his base. And I think that's where he'll go. So I'm guessing he'll go to save the trees. I don't know what he's going to do about LNG because that's a hard line for green. But he's got interesting times ahead of him. He's got some hard decisions and he's going to piss people off no matter what because he's the premier as of, well, right now.
And the ceremony was held at the Musqueam Community Center, quite a symbol there of what John Horgan started with, respecting the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, with heavy involvement from the Musqueam leadership, Chief Wayne Sparrow. I did also watch closely. David Eby did swear allegiance to King Charles III, so he didn't go off on a different tangent and fully respect everything there is about First Nations. So he's trying to balance the two, trying to balance today with trying to reconcile the past. What about that symbolism of where he held the ceremony?
I think he represents sort of the contemporary view of British Columbia by the majority of British Columbians, which is many of us are settlers. We've come to a place, our ancestors came to a place and just took it over, and there's a conversation to be had about how to make that right. And I think he's smart he understands that. I think he's smart to accent it, to make sure that British Columbia knows that we are a variety of equal people, not a settlers and Indians. We are the new British Columbians, all of us. And so bringing all of that together in whatever fashion he does, I think it plays well politically. And it's also the human being thing to do. And like I say, when he and I spent a fair bit of time together, he cares. And I'm sorry, I sound like I'm shilling for him, and I'm not. But I think, you know, like the guy I met was a lovely guy who actually cares, got into politics for all the right reasons. Whether he gets tarnished or not, we'll find out. First time something happens and he has to make a hard decision. Today's a nice day. It's a sunny day. A nice ceremony, a pretty place, good people. Everybody loves David Eby. We'll see.
Well, thanks again for joining me on the Breaker.News podcast. George Orr, veteran broadcaster and documentarian of the earlier part of David Eby's career, just as he embarked into provincial politics. David Eby is now the 37th Premier of British Columbia, sworn in on November 18th at the Musqueam Community Center, and a whole new adventure in British Columbia politics, and British Columbia politics is never dull. So thanks again, George.
Stay safe, Bob.
That was George Orr, director and producer of My Name is David Eby, the documentary about Eby's first election victory in 2013, 9 years before he became premier. You can find it on Google. Look for My Name is David Eby on Vimeo. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, Taiwan envoy sits far away from Chinese leader at APEC summit in Bangkok. Taiwan semiconductor manufacturing founder Morris Chang seated next to Singapore PM and U.S. Vice President. While a sign placed on the table in front of him read Chinese Taipei, his seating between Singapore and the U.S. showed the alphabetical order was counting him by the letter T for Taiwan or Taipei. It was the sixth time that Chang, 91, had been chosen to attend the annual event, as pressure from China does not allow the president of Taiwan to take part. In Kyoto news, more deaths, elderly cases fuel concern about Japan's new COVID wave. New coronavirus cases among the elderly are increasing, while those with severe symptoms and deaths are also on the rise, an advisory panel of experts to the health ministry said, as Japan braces for its eighth wave of infections. Nationwide infections reported in the week through Wednesday were 1.24 times higher than the previous week, with 46 out of the country's 47 prefectures marking a rise during the period. In Hong Kong Free Press, Hong Kong Customs sees over 100,000 suspected fake jerseys ahead of Qatar World Cup. Customs officers say the fake World Cup jerseys were high-quality imitations with QR codes linking to the websites of genuine manufacturers. Customs officers used X-ray devices to spot suspicious trucks carrying the suspected counterfeit jerseys, said Divisional Commander Iris Chung, who oversees the cross-boundary bridge command of customs at Shenzhen Bay. A total of 14 men aged 34 to 64 were arrested. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In the Oregonian, FBI honors Washington County couple for their dedication to raising awareness about dangers of fentanyl in wake of son's death. John and Jennifer Epstein were honored Friday with the FBI Director's Community Leadership Award for their efforts to educate the public about the dangers of fentanyl in the wake of their 18-year-old son's overdose death in December 2020. The couple's son, Cal, died while he was home from college during winter break. He was not aware that the black market OxyContin he bought contained fentanyl, a painkiller up to 100 times more potent than morphine. His parents found him unconscious in bed, a bag of blue pills marked M30 nearby. In King 5, finfish net pen aquaculture banned in Washington. The ban comes after a 2017 net pen collapse that released about a quarter million non-native Atlantic salmon into Washington waters. After the August 2017 pen collapse, the State Department of Ecology fined Cook Aquaculture $332,000 and found the company negligent. Cook also faced lawsuits from nonprofits and tribes who said the collapse posed a threat to their culture. In 2018, Cook began farming steelhead trout. DNR has denied Cook's request to release sites to continue finfish net pen aquaculture. The company has until December 14th to finish operations, begin removing its facilities, and to repair any environmental damage. In global news, cocaine, antibiotics. Report finds pollutants released in Sumas Lake area following 2021 Abbotsford farmland floods. A new report from Raincoast and the Sumas First Nation has found the surge of water and the emergence of the lake caused contaminants in the region and the nearby fish habitats. The study documented an astounding diversity of contaminants, including excess nutrients, metals, fecal coliform, hydrocarbons, pesticides, pharmaceuticals, and personal care products, as well as tire-related chemicals in the fish habitat. Cocaine and its metabolite product were found in every single sample. That's Cascadia calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate, so you won't stand alone, you won't stand alone. The Virtual Nanaimo Bar. Brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to schools, community centers, and churches. Places where new Canadians are welcomed and our heritage is celebrated. What better time than during the World Cup for Multiculturalism Week in BC? It runs November 20th to 26th. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of November 20th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 20th of November in 1945, the Nuremberg trials began for 24 Nazi war criminals? Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. That's patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. Until next week.